From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Mina Kim. Coming up on Form, should the National Park Service continue to allow the longtime practice of cattle grazing at Point Reyes National Seashore? Some environmental groups say grazing is hurting the land and wildlife there, but ranchers say they're good stewards of the land and that their ancestors are the reason West Marin land became parkland decades ago. We hear the arguments and get your thoughts next on Forum after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, welcome to Forum. I'm Mina Kim. A lawsuit filed by three environmental groups in federal court in San Francisco claims thousands of dairy and beef cattle that graze at Point Reyes National Seashore are causing erosion, harming endangered species, and polluting waterways. The groups are trying to stop the National Park Service from renewing 20-year leases to the ranchers until the environmental impacts are studied. But ranchers say the historic practice of running cattle has benefited the land, and curbing ranchers' use of it would hurt their livelihoods and the local food movement. We look at this latest battle over the management of federal land in this hour of Forum. Joining me now is Jeff Miller. He's a conservation advocate for the Center for Biological Diversity, one of the three environmental groups filing the lawsuit. Good morning, Jeff Miller.
Good morning. Thank you for having me on.
Also with us is Paul Rogers, managing editor of KQED's science unit and environment writer for the San Jose Mercury News. Good morning, Paul.
Good morning.
I want to start with you, if I could. Could you just establish the scope of what's at issue here? How much space is set aside for grazing at Point Reyes?
Yeah, you know, Point Reyes National Seashore was established in 1962 when John F. Kennedy signed the law setting it up. The park is about 71,000 acres. That's about three times the size of the city of San Francisco for people who are keeping track at home. And on that 71,000 acres, about a quarter of that has cattle grazing on it, up to 6,000 cattle at the peak, as I understand it, although that number goes up and down throughout the year.
And how many families run cattle there?
It's about 15 on the national park itself. And those ranches, this is the important thing that's central to the debate. The ranches that are operated on the park are all owned by the public. The original owners in the 1960s and 70s sold them to the national park system. And so all the land is actual national park land, although many of the families operating and leasing that land now have roots on it that go back as far as the 1850s.
And that's the point they make, right, that it was, you know, their family members who got together with the federal government to try to avoid development on the seashore?
Yeah, exactly. When the Bay Area was booming in the 1950s and 60s, and before most of the modern environmental laws were passed, there was big pressure to develop in Marin, and there were going to be subdivisions put all over the Point Reyes Peninsula. And so the Sierra Club and other environmental groups got together with the ranching community, and they basically lobbied for the creation of the park. And, you know, the coalition helped convince John F. Kennedy to sign the law. David Brower and other Sierra Club leaders basically convinced Kennedy that this was sort of a magical West Coast Cape Cod that he was familiar with. And they printed coffee table books with pictures of it and things like that to show members of Congress. And basically, what's fascinating about the debate today is that the original law and none of the legislation since has said that ranching must continue on the park. But nothing has also said that there's a deadline by which it all must be off. It's essentially in the law left up to the Secretary of Interior to decide whether to renew these leases. And, you know, these ranchers had been operating on 5- and 10-year leases. They had been paying a modest fee to the federal government to use the federal land. But as people remember, there was that big battle a couple of years ago over the oyster farm there. The oyster farm was in a similar situation. It was a private business that was leasing the national park. And essentially, Kevin Lunny, the owner of that oyster farm, also is one of the people who graze cattle out on Point Reyes. And so when the Secretary of Interior, Ken Salazar, in 2012 said he wasn't going to renew the lease on the oyster farm because it had expired, he found out that Lenny also was a rancher there. And he said, oh, I'm a rancher too from Colorado, so what can I do to help you? And Lenny said, well, we're operating under these 5- and 10-year permits. We would like, some more years on that, so we have a little more certainty. And so Salazar said, okay, how about 20? And they started this process to do 20-year leases. That's when these environmental groups jumped in and said, wait a second, before you lock in 20-year leases, we need to have a comprehensive study on the impacts of the cows to the park.
So, Jeff Miller, you are with one of the groups, the Center for Biological Diversity, that wants to see the National Park Service do what?
Well, why I sued my favorite national park. I've been coming to the park since the late 60s, actually, and I've been a big supporter, actually, of the Park Service through the oyster debate and supported the marine wilderness. I've appreciated all the mission of the park and all the work they've done to restore salmon and wetlands and eradicate invasive species, but that's really in sharp contrast with what's going on with cattle grazing in the park. The Park Service has never done a comprehensive environmental review on any level of the grazing leases. Yet here they are poised to push forward a special interest plan for commercial leases in the park that's going to lock in leases for 20 years. They've been approving leases that have expired without doing any kind of comprehensive environmental review. And they're actually entertaining the possibility of expanding commercial leases in the park. The ranchers are pushing for other animals besides cattle, also putting in row crops that are absolutely guaranteed to cause further conflicts with wildlife. And now you've got ranchers demanding that restored tule elk in the park, which this is the only national park where they occur. They're demanding they be shot, sterilized, or evicted from the park. And the Park Service appears to be willing to cave and evict the elk for the benefit of a handful of ranchers. So we stepped in because when we look at a special interest planning that just addresses ranching, we say, is that compatible with the park's general management plan? And we look at the general management plan. It was last updated when John Lennon was still alive. That was in 1980. A lot has changed since 1980, and it's impossible for us to look at a grazing plan and say whether it's compatible with what the purpose of the park is supposed to be when it's that old. And that's what our lawsuit is about, is update the general management plan before pursuing a special interest plan and go through the federal environmental review laws before approving a private commercial use that has some pretty significant environmental impacts.
We're joined now by Nicolette Hahn-Nyman. She's a livestock rancher and environmental lawyer who raises about 160 beef cows on 2,000 leased acres at their Point Reyes family ranch. Good morning, Nicolette Hahn-Nyman.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Listening to Jeff Miller, on the face of it, it sounds fairly reasonable. They just want, you know, the National Park Service to look at the management plan for grazing cattle. What's wrong with that?
Well, I think it's incredibly important to note that a number of local environmental groups were asked to join in this lawsuit, and they all refused. And the reason they refused is because there's a very long history of the local environmental community, the Park Service, and the ranchers working to solve any problems that come up. I think on the whole, the management is very good. But of course, nobody's perfect. And if we went into anybody's backyard or house, we'd probably find some things that didn't look perfect. And that's the same is true of ranching. You can probably go on any piece of land and find something that isn't perfectly done. Those examples don't mean there's a systemic problem. And I think you have actually exemplary ranching going on in general throughout the park. And you have a very proactive community that's engaged with the park and with the ranchers, and a very proactive Park Service, quite frankly. They're working very hard on working together with ranchers to solve problems that come up.
Paul Rogers, the ranchers' concerns go beyond just this idea of a plan, right? I think some of the things that were pointed out was the fact that there was specific language in the lawsuit about how the ranchers are hurting the land, how grazing is hurting the land.
Yeah, basically the environmental groups, and I would point out that the main group that filed the lawsuit is a local group. Resource Renewal Institute is based in Mill Valley. But their argument, and there's not a whole lot of extensive documentation on this. They have little, reports from different places, from different federal agencies over the years. But they say that the cattle in places have caused erosion, that they've polluted waterways with manure, that they've harmed endangered salmon and other species like tule elk, and that they've blocked public access in places, that they've put up no trespassing signs when the property, again, is a national park owned by the public.
And what's your response to that, Nicolette Hahn-Nyman?
Well, first of all, I don't consider Mill Valley local when you consider West Marin really is geographically distinct and culturally distinct.
I live in Point Reyes. Really, is that local enough?
It's really... I cannot tell you the number of people that have come up to me since, or called me or emailed me since this lawsuit was filed, people who are very active in the environmental movement who have said they're outraged. I mean, these are not people that are ranching or involved in ranching. They're environmental activists, and they're saying this does not represent their views or their perspective at all on what's happening on the ranches. So, again, you can point to, I'm sure, a situation here or there where something is not being done perfectly. It's not representative of an overall problem. And I think, in fact, the general community in West Marin is not supportive of these lawsuits at all.
Now, you've written a book, Defending Beef, The Case for Sustainable Meat Production. You also wrote Righteous Pork Chop, Finding a Life in Good Food Beyond Factory Farms. And in those books, you have talked about how sustainable ranching benefits the land. Why wouldn't an environmental impact study bear that out at Point Reyes?
Well, I mean, listen, you can always do an assessment of any given place and find things that are better or worse. But the overall argument that I make in those books, and definitely applies in this specific instance, is that wherever you have agriculture with grazing animals, when it is done well, there's a huge amount of benefit to the soils, to the soil biology, to the diversity that exists in the ecosystem, starting from the soil organism level and the plants, and then the animals that graze on those plants and live in those ecosystems. And that's exactly what is happening in the Point Reyes National Seashore. You have ranches that are permitting a tremendous amount of wildlife to live there and a lot of public recreation, and are doing all kinds of ecosystem services for the water. They're filtering water. They're creating vegetation that is allowing for diverse and thriving microorganisms to live in the soils. It's if you didn't have the ranches, I mean, our ranch is actually a perfect example. There was a large housing development complex slated for the area that we are currently ranching on. The reason it isn't a housing development is because there's a ranch there. And that's actually true for quite a few of the ranches in the Point Reyes National Seashore.
Yeah, and Paul Rogers, we talked about that earlier. Jeff Miller, do you want to see ranching stop completely at the park?
Our lawsuit doesn't say that. And I'd like to, just for a second, I'd like to address what Nicolette just said. She talked about how important grazing animals are. We have native grazing animals in the park. They're called tule elk. We've worked very hard to restore them. The ranchers want to shoot them or evict them. And those are the grazing animals that belong there, not an invasive species like cattle. There's extensive evidence of damage from cattle. It's not just us saying it. These are Park Service documents, National Fisheries Service, U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, various experts. And that's all in our lawsuit. I don't think anyone can argue that the Park Service is doing a good job of managing the grazing out there, or that it doesn't have severe environmental impacts. That's pretty much indisputable.
And I should mention, though, that we did invite the Park Service to come, but they declined to comment on pending litigation.
Understood. So our lawsuit, I really resent the we're not local argument, because I actually live in Point Reyes. We have 3,000 members and supporters in Marin. Hewa Johnson actually protected and purchased a lot of the land that was donated to the park. So we're local conservation organizations, and we have roots in the Bay Area. So. And our lawsuit, I just don't see how anyone who calls himself a conservationist or says they're representing the public interest would oppose a public and transparent review of what commercial activities are appropriate in their national park. And this is a conversation every American gets to weigh in on. And that's why we have a general management plan in the park. It's supposed to guide what activities are appropriate, and if they are, where, what restrictions, what conditions are put on it. When we're operating on an outdated 1980 general management plan, we can't even tell if the special interest cattle grazing plan that's going through is consistent with the mission of the park. So that's the first step, is let's get our general management plan so we can all be on the same page and agree what uses, and not just grazing, but all uses, recreational uses, everyone's uses are appropriate for the park, and what's changed since 1980.
Okay, because Jeff Miller, the reason that I was asking earlier about whether you want a CBN to, you know, grazing, cattle grazing at the park is because that's been one of the assertions that's been made, that you'd like to see significant reductions or it end completely.
Well, there's been a lot of mischaracterization of what our lawsuit is and isn't. What we're asking is that before the grazing plan is pursued, that the Park Service update the general management plan so that the public can weigh in on what's appropriate uses. Then the public can actually evaluate whether the existing grazing is compatible with the mission of the park, which is maximum protection of wildlife and native ecosystems and public use and enjoyment. And there are a lot of examples of ways that the ranching out there, current ranching, not even just the expansion that's proposed, may conflict with those uses. And that should be vetted in a public, transparent process, not agreed to by a few well-meaning conservationists and ranchers in a backroom deal.
Paul Rogers, this issue of the tensions between the cattle and the Tule elk has come up a bit in this conversation. Can you just give us a little background on that?
Essentially, Tule elk were a native species out there for thousands of years. And then, as with most other parts of California, in the late 1800s, they were killed off, and there were only a few dozen that were left down around Bakersfield by the 1870s. Over time, people have tried to restore them and bring their numbers back. The Park Service in 1978 introduced them back in small numbers to the north part of Point Reyes National Seashore and put a fence across, about an 8-foot-high fence, so that they wouldn't come into contact with the rest of the park and the ranchers. Then basically they tried a new expansion in about 1998, where they took another group of elk and they moved them closer to where the ranchers are. And essentially the numbers of elk have expanded in both places. And as you can imagine, just like in other places in the West, there are conflicts because elk eat grass that cows eat. Elk can walk into fences and knock them down. Elk and cows have diseases that they can give each other. So it's the kind of conflict that you see on other public lands, like Bureau of Land Management lands and National Forest lands. I think what's really interesting about this story in a lot of ways is it's a fundamental question and disagreement about what national parks should be. And interestingly, the National Park Service was established and created exactly 100 years ago in 1916. And the guy who wrote the bill that Woodrow Wilson signed was William Kent, who was the Republican congressman from Marin and for whom Kent Field is named. And if you look back at the 1916 law, it says that we're going to create a National Park Service, quote, to conserve the scenery and the national and historic objects and the wildlife therein, and to provide for the enjoyment of the same in such a manner and by such means as will leave them unimpaired for the enjoyment of future generations. And for 100 years as a country, we've been arguing over what exactly that means. And I think the best argument that the ranchers have is that this is a historic use on this property, and that part of the mission of the National Park Service is to preserve the history of special places in America. Now, they don't have a particularly good argument that, this is just part of being a park and grazing, is what national parks do, because we have 410 national parks in America, and only about 30 of them allow grazing. None of California's state parks allow grazing, and in fact, commercial grazing is banned on almost every other national park, unless there were special circumstances like this one. So the historic argument, I think, is going to be the one that they may legally have the most sound footing on.
Paul Rogers, he's our managing editor of our science unit here at KQED, and he's an environment writer for the San Jose Mercury News. We're also joined by Jeff Miller. He's a conservation advocate at the Center for Biological Diversity, one of the three environmental groups who's filed a lawsuit against the National Park Service, and Nicolette Hahn Nyman. She's a livestock rancher and environmental lawyer who raises about 160 beef cows on 2,000 leased acres at their Point Reyes family ranch. Nicolette Hahn Nyman, you are an environmental lawyer.
Yes.
And so do you think Paul Rogers is right? And is that the argument that you would like to see made
one, and two, do you have faith in the National Park Service to defend the ranchers?
Yeah, I mean, okay, first of all, I think that is a very strong argument, and in particular in this instance, because that at the time that this park was created, it was being farmed and ranched. And that was always the understanding from the beginning. And in fact, there was a great deal of cooperation and desire by a lot of the farming and ranching community for this to happen. So there's kind of this idea that somehow the ranching and farming is, is trespassing on the park. And that's actually completely misunderstanding the whole way the park was created. And the language of that from Mr. Kent, which was really interesting to hear that, this idea that you're trying to protect something for the aesthetic quality as well. I think that's a really important aspect of this question, is the sort of the beauty of the farming and ranching that's there that I think the vast majority of people really appreciate. I want to say one other thing, though, with respect to the native flora and fauna that are there. It really depends on how far you go back in history, because as I talk about in Defending Beef, California had a large number. It's estimated to be between 18 or 19 megafauna that existed in this state for literally millions of years. And it included many different types of grazing animals. The elk are just one of the surviving species. And they included two types of bison, camels, two types of elephants. There were enormous animals that had huge impact footprints on the land. And actually what we see today, the tule elk are just a tiny, tiny remnant of the physical impact that is taking place on that land and was there for millions of years during its evolution. So the idea that we should basically take all the animals off of it is really counter to thinking holistically about ecosystems and how they should be restored for proper functioning.
But the average lease, once this deal was made back in the 1960s, the average lease years was 20 years or sometimes 5 to 10 years. That does not necessarily mean, Paul Rogers, that ranchers are guaranteed to be there forever, right? I mean, they have to continue to show that they're adhering to national park rules?
Right, and it's up to the Secretary of Interior on whether to renew the leases. Basically, the Park Service spent about $50 million in the 60s and 70s buying out the ranchers. So it bought the property. That's why the property is part of the national park. And the original deal from the 70s said that they could stay until the death of the original owner or their spouse. And basically, just about all those agreements have lapsed. And so now we're on these 5 to 10 year short-term leases, which the ranchers don't really like, and they want more certainty.
All right. Well, I'd like to invite our listeners to join the conversation just before we go into the break. What do you think about the role of farming and agriculture at national parks, as was brought up earlier? How would you balance the needs of ranchers and the environment? Is it time to change the deal between the federal government and ranchers? Give us a call with your thoughts or questions at 866-733-6786. Again, that's 866-733-6786. You can also email your questions or comments to forum@kqed.org or post them on our website, kqed.org/forum. I'm Mina Kim. Stay with us. Welcome back to Forum. I'm Mina Kim. We're talking about a lawsuit that contends the longtime practice of running cattle at Point Reyes National Seashore is harming the land and that the National Park Service needs to reevaluate their agreement with ranchers. We're joined by Jeff Miller. He's a conservation advocate for the Center for Biological Diversity, one of the three environmental groups who filed the lawsuit. Also, Nicolette Hahn-Nyman. She's a livestock rancher and an environmental lawyer who's written a book called Defending Beef, The Case for Sustainable Meat Production, and raises about 160 beef cows on Point Reyes. And also joining us is Paul Rogers. He's managing editor of KQED's science unit and environment writer for the San Jose Mercury News. I'd like to let our listeners weigh in here. Let's first go to Jay in Sonoma. Hi, Jay.
Yes, hello. Can you hear me?
Yes.
I've lived in the Bay Area. I'm 60 years old. I've lived in the Bay Area all but for 15 years, and I've been going to Point Reyes since I was a little kid. And I mean, unfortunately, one of the things that's being lost in this lawsuit is that, you know, these are some of the only working landscapes in the entire urbanized Bay Area. There's, you know, real people, real families making their living on the land. And, you know, they're a unique situation almost in the entire Bay Area, since they're truly are working landscapes that have been there, been working for decades. And I just think that's a shame that that's being overlooked.
Well, Jay, thanks for bringing that up. Nicolette Hahn-Nyman, why can't you move the herd to another location?
Well, as has been talked about quite a bit, there's a long sort of multi-generational history for many of these ranches. And, I mean, actually, in this geography, the land that's available for agriculture is very tight at this point. And in fact, there's a huge amount of development pressure, which makes the real estate values really, really high. Agriculture is kind of an anomaly in this kind of an urban landscape because of the fact that the property values are so high. So, in fact, if you hadn't have had this creation of the parks and MALT and the other organizations that have been working so hard to preserve these agricultural spaces, you probably would have seen a disappearance of the farming and ranching. But I think a huge number of people really enjoy and appreciate not just the physical beauty of those farms, but also the products, the wonderful milk, the yogurt, the beef. And it's actually some of the most exemplary food that can be bought anywhere in the world is being produced here. And I think that's another important aspect.
And how could this lawsuit disrupt the, you know, local food delivery?
Well, one of the things that got pointed out to me in the conversations with local people about this is that there's a sort of a necessary critical mass of agriculture in any geography in order to keep it functioning. So if you don't have enough dairies, for example, in a given place, it's not possible for the places where the milk gets processed and the trucks that come and bring the feed and so forth, they won't go there anymore if there aren't enough farms. And so it was pointed out to me in a conversation with another farmer that even the farms that are not in the park system are kind of dependent on the continued existence of these farms.
Hmm. Well, Shelley in Fairfax, hello.
Hi. Hi. Thanks for having this forum. I had a question. Given that the lawsuit is ostensibly about due public process with the general management plan, maybe not specifically about trying to get rid of ranchers on the park, might the lawsuit then also be extended to any other Park Service decisions or contracting if the idea is that no decision should be made or contracts entered into until the general management plan is updated? Wouldn't that then also apply to other kinds of contracting and decision-making? And couldn't the processes run in parallel given how long it does take to update general management plans? Or is there some way to have a parallel process going on here instead of having to wait? And what might be an unintended consequence of extending this idea of nothing should happen until the general management plan is updated?
Shelley, thanks. Let me put that question to Jeff Miller.
Well, we've got two different planning processes. A general management plan is kind of guides what happens in the park. And it's a very open and public process where the public weighs in on what are appropriate uses. And what we have here instead is a promise from the Secretary of the Interior to a special interest group. And fortunately, we have strong federal environmental laws that prevent backroom deals like that. And it's not up to the Secretary of the Interior to just go ahead and basically give additional perks to a special interest group. We think that actually, yeah, any activity in the park, whether it's, I mean, if people wanted to start mountain biking or wanted to start hunting or do skydiving in the park, we certainly would hope they would look at those potential uses and decide if they were appropriate and consistent with the mission of the park. We can't do that right now because we have a general management plan from 1980 that has two paragraphs about tule elk. And we've already got the Park Service shooting tule elk. They've shot 20 elk since last fall at the behest of a handful of commercial leaseholders. And that's just insanity. That's no way to run a park. And, you know, this is a world-class park. The public deserves better, and the public deserves some input and a transparent process.
Paul Rogers, what are the broader implications of this lawsuit if it succeeds in terms of any environmental decisions?
Yeah, Huey Johnson, who is the founder of the Resources Renewal Institute, which is one of the organizations that's filed the lawsuit, you know, he is an interesting guy. He was Jerry Brown's original resources secretary when Brown was governor in the 70s and 80s. He's also a co-founder of the Trust for Public Land, which has preserved millions of acres of land in California and across the country. And, you know, he told me that if they're successful here, they're going to try to use the same tactic in the other 30 or so national parks that allow grazing around the United mm-hmm. States. And, you know, I think politically there's a couple of really interesting angles, too. I agree with Nicolette that if this was put up to a vote in West Marin, the public in West Marin would almost certainly support the ranchers. Mm-hmm. I think also, though, that I agree with something Jeff said, which is that the people of West Marin don't own this park. This park is owned by the people of the United States. And so we have these kind of debates about what should be allowed, how much commercial activity is too much, at lots of parks. You know, should we have snowmobiles in Yellowstone? Should we have burro rides to the bottom of the Grand Canyon? You know, and almost every park has issues like this. And when you get in with ranchers, there are real strong emotions. People love John Wayne. They love the family farmer. In this case, Senator Feinstein has been a strong supporter of ranching on public lands in California and was a supporter of Kevin Lunny and his oyster farm battle. So some of the environmental groups are basically afraid of getting on the wrong side of Senator Feinstein, and they oppose grazing in other park units, but here they don't want to wade into this nuclear controversy, particularly since people's emotions are still kind of raw after the fight over the oyster farm.
Yeah. Well, Kelly writes, how are we supposed to support local agriculture if environmental groups keep shutting everything down? It seems like they would prefer a world where all cattle are raised in those corporate places out in the Central Valley. George writes, proponents argue that grazing must continue at Point Reyes to provide food for local food, but there's nothing unique about Point Reyes cattle production. Cattle are produced locally on private lands throughout the region, including in Santa Cruz, San Mateo, Sonoma, Napa, and elsewhere in Marin County, for that matter. I seriously doubt that someone purchasing local meat cares whether that cow is grown in San Mateo or Sonoma County. But there are few places where tule elk can be grown. Isn't it appropriate for a national park to be managed for production of native wildlife, not domesticated livestock? And let's go to Carrie in West Marin. Hi, Carrie.
Hi. So my heart of hearts says the cattle should be gone, but I believe that I'm fearful about Marin Agriculture Land Trust losing support and people wanting to work with them if they fear down the line, you know, they will not be able to have cattle out there. And I also believe that ranchers really, yeah, they do have support, and I love that area. I live in that area, but they really do need to back off on the elk because that's where they do lose support, and all over the country they lose support on that. Those are, if they want to have that privilege, they need to work with the animals that are there, and they should not be killing those, and they do not have the support of the community on that one.
Carrie,
but, you know, malt is really, really vital. I'd rather see cows there than development. So I do believe that they should all work together to keep them there, because once you lose horses and cows out in West Marin, you lose it. You lose the whole West Marin, honestly. And it's really vital to keep that whole zoning there. It's vital to keep cattle. It's vital to keep horses. And we're losing little inclinations of that, you know, year by year.
So. Carrie, thank you. I actually want to get a reaction from Nicolette Hahn-Nyman here. So, you know, Jeff Miller is talking about ranchers advocating shooting of tule elk and so forth. Are you doing that?
No, I mean, we're kind of fortunate in that we're in the very southern area, so we ourselves
are
not facing the elk issue ourselves. But I can say that one point I think is really important to say before I even answer that question is that the backroom deals language is just so inappropriate. They've had literally hundreds of meetings on this management plan update. The Park Service. I don't speak for the park, so I can't give you the details, but I know that the the director of the park told me that they've had around 200 meetings. And it's many of those have been public meetings. And there has been a huge amount of public discussion about all this. So this notion that this is somehow happening in private quarters is completely false. With respect to the elk, I think it's actually the last caller, I think, made a really good point. That's something that needs to be worked out. We have not been involved in it directly, and we certainly have not taken any position in favor of getting rid of the elk. And as a longtime environmentalist and as a former I used to work for the National Wildlife Federation as a lawyer before I worked for Waterkeeper. I've been actively involved in suing over restoration of wildlife species. I believe in the importance of working cooperatively to solve that issue. And actually, I think that's what the park is trying very, very hard to do. So this suggestion that they're not doing anything or that this is somehow excluding the public, it's just wrong. It's just false.
Paul Rogers, there seem to be several conspiracy theories around this particular situation. Some have contended that the Park Service is actually in cahoots with the environmental groups that are doing the lawsuit so that they could have more leverage against ranchers in terms of whatever, you know, new regulations they might want to put out.
I haven't heard that, and I don't agree with that. I think the Park Service is afraid of Dianne Feinstein.
Jeff Miller, do you want to...
That's why they're not on your show.
Yeah, I'd agree with Paul there. You know, I want to get back to I think what's been lost in some of the things I said a little earlier is that this is public land, and we paid the ranchers for that land. We also gave them very generous long-term lease agreements to continue grazing well below market rate. They're subsidized in multiple ways by the taxpayers, and there's no vested right. Let's be absolutely clear. There's no vested right or grazing privileges or grazing rights whatsoever at Point Reyes. And I hear this language about a promise made by the Secretary of the Interior, and that's what I'm referring to about backroom deals. And that's – the Secretary can't make that promise. Grazing is a privilege out there. And actually, it's Park Service policy, official policy, to eliminate commercial grazing leases wherever possible on Park Service lands. And that's something that needs to be evaluated, is whether some of these grazing units actually have a higher public use not being in grazing. That's not to say all grazing needs to go away, but let's at least look at it and have a discussion about what's the best use.
Nicolette, a quick response.
Yes, I just want to say that it's absolutely untrue that these leases are way below market rate. That is true for BLM land in other parts of the United States. That is not true at all. We are paying on our land approximately the same as we would for private land, and that's true for most of the farms and ranches. And I heard from someone I was talking to the other day that an analysis by UC Davis about the rates of the leases is that the Point Reyes leases are paying on average something like 2 to 3 times what the average lease rate would be on public land. So it's really important to distinguish this. This is not comparable to the BLM leases in other parts of the country.
Paul Rogers, can you shed any light on this? Because, yes, there's been reporting of both things. One saying that there's a study that found that, you know, federal grazing fees are generally like 10% of what's charged for use of private land. And then there's other reports that say that ranchers at Point Reyes pay more than 3 times the standard federal fee.
Yeah, I've written a lot about grazing on public land in the West over the years. And basically, both arguments here have an element of truth. Essentially, the grazing rate for Forest Service and BLM land is $1.35 per cow per month. That's what people pay to rent public land in most of the country. And in many of those places, the private going rate is 10 times that. So, yeah, we are subsidizing on Forest Service and BLM land. The government loses about $100 million a year on that program. It's a drop in the bucket, you know, on the whole federal budget, but it's still a loss. In Point Reyes, as I understand it, the beef rate is $7 per cow per month. And I think the dairy ranch rate, and maybe Nicolette can shed some light on this, is a number that is comparable to what private land ranchers would pay to rent private land. I mean, my understanding generally is that the park at Point Reyes sort of breaks even, but they're not losing money like other units are on the ranching program. And like at Capitol Reef in Utah, I think they're paying $1.35, you know, so they're losing money. But I think they're sort of breaking even now. You can argue what other costs are put in there, you know, the cost of this planning process that's going on right now and whether to give them 20-year leases or not. But generally, they do pay more at Point Reyes than they do on other public lands.
Well, let me get more listeners in here. Nate in Glen Ellen. Hi, Nate.
Hi. Thanks very much for being on the show. Great discussion. So I'm a cattle producer from Sonoma County, And I've had the privilege of working on a number of the ranches in the park. And I come to this profession as from an ecological perspective. I grew up in the suburbs, and I've had a longstanding interest in native grass and biodiversity in general. And so in some ways, I feel like I've got a little bit of a different perspective on this. I definitely agree with some of the things that Nicolette's saying about the potential for livestock in the park to be a really powerful tool, particularly what she says about the megafauna, which is something that we try to study and work with to mimic the effect that those animals have. But I do think that us cattle producers would benefit by admitting and that there are some major ecological problems with cattle in the park the way they're currently managed. I've never been to Nicolette's place. I know Bill and Nicolette kind of tangentially, but I've never been to your place. But I have seen almost all the cattle properties in the park, and there are problems. That being said, the fact that those livestock are in the park provide an incredible opportunity to create more positive land management.
So, Nate,
so it would be a shame to lose that tool.
Okay, that's basically what I wanted to ask you, was if you felt like they should be reduced or gone away, or if you feel like they can still exist as they are, but with better management by the National Park Service, potentially.
Right. I think that the sort of the contentious either or nature of this discussion is a little bit of the problem. It reflects a little bit of the problem.
Well, Nate, thanks for your thoughts. I really appreciate it. A listener writes, isn't cow manure a form of fertilizer? I have to call BS on these dippy claims about cows harming the land. Even if the cows have prion disease, their feces should be beneficial to the environment, and they aren't predators. So what's the problem? This all sounds like a mindless attack on ranchers by loopy land grabbers. Stephanie writes, the ranchers brought this on themselves by refusing to mitigate water pollution, land degradation, and harm to wildlife. Sure, the Park Service and the ranching community struck a deal to grandfather in the existing ranches when the National Seashore was designated, but that doesn't absolve them from federal laws regulating pollution. The Park Service is legally bound to evaluate whether uses on federal land violate federal law. If they do, they either need to be significantly changed or canceled altogether. Why is this even controversial? And another listener writes, the science and the studies need to be kept current. Leases can't just go on indefinitely without periodic study. Study it and see what methods can be improved. Do you have a reaction to that, Nicolette Hahn-Lyman?
The only issue, the only thing I would say is that that is absolutely happening all the time. I mean, we just had a group of people from the park out on our ranch yesterday. They're there a lot, and they were looking at the vegetation and what's happening. We have had, I think, about a half a dozen meetings with them at our house about the specifics of our ranch in the sort of purview of this management plan update. They're doing that with all the ranchers, and they're looking very specifically at every ranch and every single water course and areas of, the grades and possible erosion areas. I mean, this is happening. That's what's so problematic to me about this whole lawsuit, is it's pretending as though this is not occurring. There's a very active process, and it's very collaborative, and it's very time and labor intensive. So this idea that people are just sitting around and letting things go bad is just wrong.
Well, let's go to Scott in Illinois. Hi, Scott.
Hi, how are you?
I'm well. Go ahead.
I got in a little bit late on your conversation, but I was intrigued because I'm what you might call a prairie enthusiast, and I'm heavily involved in the food movement. And so, therefore, I read and think a lot about these topics you're talking about. And I've really changed my thinking of how I've burned my own prairie in the past, which has been the conventional wisdom to manage it. And I've completely transformed that to thinking, I mean, some of the big animals on the prairie here in the Midwest to reduce the climate change impact of burning the prairie, and instead having the animals nurture the prairie to put the carbon back in the soil rather than in the atmosphere. So as I listen to your callers and your panel talk about this. It seems like there's an opportunity for the government and the ranchers and the environmentalists to get together in the spirit of reducing the impact of humans and animals on the climate. And a lot of that's been said, but it just seems like we almost need this to happen to ensure our own survivability and take care of the topsoil, which animals can help us do if we manage them properly.
Scott, thanks so much. Jeff Miller, did this need a lawsuit?
Absolutely. The Park Service has never, ever done an environmental impact statement on the impacts of cattle grazing at Point Reyes National Seashore. And that is a shame.
You tried to reach out to them and they just refused.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I've met with the Park Service many times. They have quite a number of studies and documents showing impacts. The public is subsidizing controlling the invasive plants that are happening out there, the pollution of waterways, fencing out salmon streams to keep salmon from cattle from trampling the vegetation along salmon streams. And now our elk are being shot over a disease that cattle actually spread to elk. And so, there's a lot of evidence, and I'm glad someone brought up climate change, because cattle grazing is actually one of the biggest contributors to climate greenhouse gases. And one of the biggest carbon footprints you can have is to eat beef. It also takes a lot of water. So if we're interested in climate, we should be looking at our native grazing animals, which are elk, which we've worked very hard to restore. And a last point I'd like to make is rather than just us debate about what the actual costs are and whether these ranchers are subsidized, the Park Service is actually posts all that information on their webpage, on their ranch plan webpage. And you can go there and look how much the ranchers pay, which is $7 per animal unit. And you can go research what they would pay just over the park border on private land is $21. So absolutely, they're paying less there.
All right. Well, let's go to Todd in Hayward. I want to hear from you, Todd.
Hello. Good morning.
Good morning.
So I'm an environmental science teacher here in Hayward, and we had discussed this issue in class and read about it and debated it. And it seems like the whole issue, one, is not a new issue. It goes back to a deal that the ranchers made with the Park Service that they would, they paid them for the property, around $50 million the government paid for the property. And they let them stay and continue ranching for 40 plus years. And they knew that it was going to expire. With the death of the original landowner. So it's not a new issue, and I don't know why it needed a lawsuit to get there, but that's why I think the lawsuit was filed by the environmentalists, is that, you know, when the original landowners pass away, they still want to stay, and they won't leave unless there's a lawsuit.
All right. Well, Todd, thank you. Paul Rogers, regardless of how folks feel about whether ranching should be allowed at Point Reyes or allowed to continue as it is now, grazing land overall is going away, right?
It depends where you are. Certainly in urban areas, yeah. Although there are still a lot of places in the Bay Area, I don't know the exact number off the top of my head.
I'm sorry, I meant on federal lands, grazing on federal lands.
Well, there's still tens of millions of acres all over the West. The federal government owns 80% of Nevada, 50% of California. I mean, there's vast areas where we have cattle grazing. And actually, we produce more beef on states that don't have public land. You know, there's more beef produced in places like Georgia and Florida than some places on public land that we think of as cowboy states. But I think going to this question of why now, why is this lawsuit filed now, I don't think it's necessarily that the enviros decided one morning, let's kick the cows off of Point Reyes. I think it was actually when Interior Secretary Salazar said, let's start this process to give them 20-year leases. The environmental groups had never been that comfortable with this, suddenly said, oh, my God, they're going to lock it in for a long time. This is our only chance, to test it in court and to try to put some limits on it. And my guess is if they are successful and a court requires a full environmental impact study, what that will do is delay the granting of 20-year leases. The ranchers will continue on 5- to 10-year leases as they are now. And in the end, a full EIR would probably reduce but not eliminate the number of cows out there. But what it would do is open up the Park Service to further lawsuits where enviros or anybody else could say, hey, they didn't do the EIR right. And so this part over here needs to be reopened, or we're going to sue under this part to try to reduce more over here, or make these fences come down, or here's an endangered plant that we didn't know was there, and the cows are eating it, so cows can't be on this part of the park. You know, so it basically would give critics of cattle grazing a lot more tools to limit it.
Jeff Miller?
I'm not sure that's true. I think I agree with most of what Paul said. I think if the Park Service was operating under an updated and valid general management plan, they get a lot of deference when they go into court. You know, judges give agencies a lot of leeway. And if they have a comprehensive general management plan that says, here's how we're going to manage the park, it's through a public vetted process, they're going to prevail on that. And that's what we're trying to get to here.
Nicolette Hahn-Nyman, your final thought.
Just a couple of quick points. The amount of grazing on public lands has declined dramatically. In Defending Beef, I cite BLM records that show that there's about 57% less total grazing on federal lands now than there was 50 years ago. So there's quite a bit less more.
It's inconsequential to the total beef production.
I'm not talking about the total beef production. I'm talking about the amount of public lands that are being used for grazing.
We just have seconds left.
And it has gone down. And, you know, I just think that the ranching is working well there, and lawsuits are counterproductive.
Well, Douglas writes as a final thought, as a committed environmentalist and avid user of Point Reyes, I'm deeply troubled by the absolutist approach taken by the sponsors of the lawsuit. This should be an opportunity for collaboration, which inevitably involves some compromise rather than confrontation. I want to thank Nicolette Hahn-Nyman, livestock rancher and environmental lawyer, for joining us. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you to you, Jeff Miller, with the Center for Biological Diversity.
Thank you.
And of course, thanks, Paul Rogers, with KQED Science Unit.
Thank you.
Forum is produced by Irene Noguchi, Tina Lauerberg, and Judy Campbell. Our engineer is Danny Bringer. Our engagement producer is Amanda Stupai, with support from Amanda Font. Our senior editor is Dan Zoll, and Joanne Wallace is our executive producer. I'm Mina Kim.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio, the Germanicos Foundation, and the Generosity Foundation, and by a generous gift from Jan Schremm and Maria Minetti Schremm, founders of Clos Pegase Winery, who believe that all people deserve access to education, information, and culture for a lifetime of exploration and learning.